Radio Pulpit, 657 AM.
Oh man, it breaks my heart to have to pause that song. I know. We'll play it right after this. Sorry, that was my mistake. We've managed to get Johan on the line, talking car questions everyone wants to ask, but I'm just too afraid to. How are you doing, Johan?
Good morning or good afternoon, I'm doing well with yourself.
I am doing fantastic. Thank you so much for giving us your time. And I am seriously looking forward to this conversation because I've always wanted to ask somebody these questions, right? But at the same time, you don't want to look silly. Like, why didn't you know that? You know, you've been driving for years. What is wrong with you? Like, I always feel like someone's going to give me the side eye, like what's is doing right now.
There are no silly questions. I can promise you that.
Okay, cool. So, and by the way, if you're listening to us and you have a question yourself, don't be shy. WhatsApp, telegram us, and if you want to remain anonymous, be specific. I'll be sure to honor it. 082-657-2729. You can WhatsApp or telegram us there, or 37871. That's our text line at the cost of 150. Or give us a ring on 012-334-1322. Okay, first question, and this happens all the time, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, when I'm driving and it's raining or whatever the case. Why do our cars hydroplane?
I'm hoping it doesn't happen to you all the time.
Well, no, not all the time. But ever so, you know what, if it happens once, it's enough to scare you actually to slow down.
Yeah.
But why does that happen?
Well, it's without getting too technical, what happens is there's an amount of water on the road, and of course that water doesn't disperse as fast as necessary. Depends on how hard it rains. So you've got a set of tires on your car, and the grooves in those tires are designed to displace the water, and so that your tires still touch the road. As long as you have contact with the road, you won't slide. And if those grooves can't disperse water fast enough, then basically what happens is that you are on the water, which means that you cannot brake, you cannot accelerate, you cannot steer. You are basically sliding, which can be a very dangerous situation. Highly out of traffic, and especially maybe with passengers in the car. We had a very specific test about this on Gyrotech.
Oh, Johan, we're losing you. I don't know what's happening. Can you still hear me? Okay, your line is breaking terribly. Let's do this.
Okay. Are you there?
Yes. Oh, great. Now, all of a sudden, you're a lot clearer. Okay. Please continue.
I'm sorry. I had an incoming call. I just put it down. I think that's what happened.
Ah, is that what happened? All right. No problem.
I was saying we had a test on Gyrotech once with different sets of tires on the same car. I need to stress this. It was on the same car. It was not a Mercedes that had all the safety systems that you need in a car. So it could basically auto brake and steer and everything. And on Gyrotech, they've got a sliding space where they put water on the road where you can actually aquaplane. You could put 2 millimeters or 6 millimeters, 10 millimeters, whatever. Mm-hmm. Different amounts of water on the road. And then you can see when the car starts hydroplaning. And with the good tires and within that car, all the systems would actually come into play and catch the car when it started sliding and save the car and the occupants. Huh. But when they were on bad tires, even the systems in the Mercedes did not work because it can only work if it's got traction on the road. And if you're on bad tires and the tires can't displace the water, you're basically sliding on water, and it wouldn't matter what car you're in or what systems you've got. If you're sliding, you're sliding. So it's very important to have good tires with good tread on them. Otherwise, you're going to aquaplane.
Very interesting. And it's also so even your driving skills don't really matter.
Like even your driving skills wouldn't matter because if you're sliding, you're sliding. And
yeah.
And remember, that whole car that may have 2 tons is basically the size of your hand. There's 4 patches the size of your hand between the car and the tarmac, which needs to accelerate and brake and turn and everything in that 2-ton car with you in it. And if those 4 patches don't make proper contact with the road, you've got no control.
Interesting. Okay. All right. We've covered the hydroplane bit. What about the sounds that my brakes make, right, when I'm driving? And I just want to throw it out there that there are no stupid questions in this conversation. Everything goes because we need a better understanding of our cars. Because you know that noise, like you'll be driving your car, and then it starts making that weird noise, and it seems to get louder and louder the longer you drive. What does that mean, and what should be done about it?
Yes, I was just going to tell you, it depends on what kind of noise it makes. So the noise you just illustrated is probably something like dust on the brake discs, which happens, and it makes a very annoying noise. It's not a big problem. It can be fixed easily, and it can be taken off. So you've got that funny noise that you just made, which could be just the dirty discs or the dirty brakes. You also get a grinding noise,
yes,
which is something that you don't want to hear. Because you've got brake discs on your wheels, and then you've got brake pads that basically push against those brake discs to cause friction and to slow the car down and to brake the car. Now, those brake pads have got a substance on them that basically wears down over time, and then if everything is worn down, it comes to the brake pad itself, which is metal, and the disc is metal, and that grinding sound is when the metal starts touching the metal.
Mm-hmm.
So your brake disc will be finished, and you need to put in new brake discs. If you drive like that for too long, the metal on the brake pad is going to scrape into the metal of the brake disc, and then you'll eventually need new brake discs as well, and then it becomes very costly. So When it comes to brakes, also it's a safety thing. If when it comes to brakes and you worry about it, it's the best thing to do something about it.
All righty. If you've just joined us, welcome. We are in conversation with motor journalist Johan van Donder, and we are talking car questions that everyone wants to ask, but they're just too afraid to, or things that you feel like you should know, but you don't. We've had a question come in here from Tori Sone. I don't know if this is your expertise or something that you would be able to answer, but I'm going to ask anyway, just in case. Apparently, after an X amount of years, he says here, of paying off your car, you can actually swap it for another without having paid it completely. Please confirm, correct, or clarify what is needed. Thanks in advance.
Okay, he is partially correct, depending on what he meant. You get new types of finance these days. People have any innovative ways to sell you a new car.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got very flexible finance packages these days. So let's take an expensive German car, and it's just a hypothetical repayment amount. Let's say there's an expensive German car that you like, and the repayment amount will be 10,000 rand a month.
Okay.
So what they do is they tell you, you can have this car, and you're only going to pay 4,000 rand a month, not 10.
Okay.
But there's going to be a big balloon payment in the end. Let's say there's going to be a 400,000 rand residual payment in the end. So you're going to owe us, by the end of your payments, you're going to owe us 400,000 rand.
Right.
But we will guarantee you that we will buy the car back at the end of this term for 400,000. So it effectively becomes like a cell phone contract. You buy this expensive car that would cost 10. You only pay four. You pay the 4,000 rand, let's say, for 3 years or 4 years, whatever the deal might be.
Mm-hmm.
Then you give them back the car, and they buy it back from you for whatever the amount is that is still outstanding.
Okay.
So you've driven the car for less for 3 years, and you give them back the car, and you do another deal. You say, okay, now I want that new car on the same kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
And you start paying 4,000 rand again for the new car, and after 3 years, you give them back that car for whatever you still owe, and you get a new one. It's almost like a cell phone contract. So you never own the car, but you can drive it around for 3 years at a much lesser installment.
I feel like there should be a catch here, and that you're not sharing it with us. Is there a catch?
Yeah, there's a sort of a catch. You can't drive the car for 1,000,000 kilometers. Usually there's parameters where they say the car has to be in good nick. It can't have more than 60,000 k's on the clock when we buy it back, etc., etc., etc. So there are some things where they say don't do more than 20,000 k's a year, which is more or less average what you do anyway.
Unless you're driving down to Durban or Cape Town.
Yeah, so you can't buy a car on that scheme and use it for a taxi service. But if it's just going to be a personal car, you can actually drive a car that's a much nicer than you would be able to afford, and then give it back after the contract period. But you will never then own the car, buy off the car and own the car,
mm-hmm.
which some people say is a bad thing because you want to own a car. I, on the other hand, say it's just, they are so technologically advanced these days that 3 years, 4 years down the line, I mean, the Nokia 3110 was an excellent, excellent cell phone. Everybody agrees to that, but nobody wants it today.
Very true. Very, very true. Yeah, I miss those Nokias, actually. Back in the day. All righty. I trust that you've been answered. Let us know if you have a follow-up question. Okay, let's get back to our questions then. Why do the signal lights blink faster sometimes?
Okay, there could be a couple of reasons for this.
Mm-hmm.
It also depends on whether it's a newer vehicle or an older vehicle or a motorcycle for something like that. It's easy. If you're on a 125cc motorcycle, which is a really simple machine, and one of the light bulbs go, the indicator bulbs go, the other one would flicker faster because there's less resistance. And then you just replace the one that's gone, and everything would be back fine again with the normal blinking. It could be also just a bad ground connection. The fault is the bulb could be faulty. The flickering unit could be faulty, but usually it's not a big thing. If one bulb blows, then the other ones go a little faster until you fix it, and then it's fixed again.
All righty. We're in conversation with motor journalist Johan van Dondel, going through the questions that everyone wants to ask, but they're just too afraid to. If you'd like, Teresa, have a question, by all means, feel free to get in touch. 082-657-2729. That's our WhatsApp or Telegram. You can send a text on 37871 at the cost of 150 per SMS, or give us a ring on 012-334-1322. By the way, I'm live on Facebook. Just random thought. Wasn't made sure of that. Just throwing it out there. Okay, here's the other one that I've always wondered about, right? The difference between a diesel and a gas engine, and honestly, what would happen if I got that mixed up?
Okay, there's quite a big difference between the two engines, and it's a big thing when you mix it up. and the difference is basically that diesel is an oil, and gasoline is a solvent. So it's totally different types of fuels. And in a diesel engine, of course, is designed differently to use a different kind of fuel. And because diesel is an oil, the fuel itself lubricates a lot of the components in the engine. So now you can imagine if you put a gas in, which is a solvent, which is not going to lubricate anything in the engine. It's like running the engine without oil.
Mm-hmm.
And that would cause a lot of damage. It will basically, the whole gasoline system, all the filters, the pumps, the injectors, everything would be damaged, and you would need to replace the whole system.
Makes sense.
Yeah, you can't use the wrong fuel in the wrong system.
I hear you. The difference between a two-stroke and a four-stroke engine?
Okay, also trying not to get too technical. These are different kinds of engines. A two-stroke gets its name because there's a piston or pistons in all engines. And the two-stroke, the piston makes two strokes for one rotation of the engine,
mm-hmm.
While a four-stroke where the piston makes four strokes for the rotation of the engine. But it's not that easy. It's also the way the fuel and the air moves through the engine. A two-stroke has ports while a four-stroke has valves and different kinds of components. So a two-stroke is a much simpler engine. It's a much simpler engine to work on. It's a cheaper engine to build, but it's not as efficient as a four-stroke. So the four-stroke is more expensive and more complicated, but it's got better power delivery. And that's basically it. If you're on a motorbike, for instance, if you're one of these dual sport motorbikes and you're out in the field and you do a river crossing and you drop your bike in the water, your four-stroke motorbike, the engine will be totaled.
Sure.
Because it gets water inside the engine and switch them off. With a two-stroke, because it doesn't have valves, it's got sports, you try to start it and all the water goes out the exhaust and it starts eventually and off we go.
Fascinating. All righty. Now, I've heard it said, was it my dad who said it? Somebody said it. A man in my life said that in order to save petrol, right, that it's better to fill up, we're talking saving money on gas here or diesel, whatever, that
yes.
It's better to keep your tank as full as possible, because apparently the lower your tank goes, the more petrol it charges and therefore works at your disadvantage, besides the fact that you don't want to, you know, let it get on empty, etc., because then all the dirt from the bottom starts going up. But is it true? Is that how you save money on gas?
No, I think the saving there would be negligible. But also you don't want to run your tank too empty because there could be particles or something in the tank. And if you take the very last bit of fuel, that could go through your fuel system. Mm-hmm. So having a fuller tank is just healthier, if I can use that word. I don't think it's going to save as much as something, for instance, well, it's going to be a function of your right foot, firstly. If you want to save petrol, drive slower. 80, 90 kilometers an hour is going to be more fuel efficient than 120, which is going to be more fuel efficient than 160. So driving slower and not accelerating hard and braking hard, but trying to drive more flowingly. I'm not sure if I'm using the right word.
You can make them up, it's fine.
It's going to save you fuel. But a very easy thing to save fuel, actually, is to check your tire pressures. And I know we were going to get to that. But if your tires are underinflated, there's more running resistance on the road. And this can actually make a difference in your fuel usage up to 10%. Mm-hmm. So you can have a 10% saving in fuel if you just by running the correct tire pressures.
Okay. Johan, going back to the conversation we had from Teresa's question, Priscilla texted us here on Facebook, and I don't know if there's a name for that plan, right? She says here, I just missed the part of the conversation where I was talking about using the car for 3 years and then handing it back to them. What plan is that? Is there a name to it?
There is a name to it. There are different names. Different manufacturers use different names. I think Jeep used to call it traction finance. I think Mercedes used to call it agility finance. But you could basically what it is you finance the car with a balloon payment and a guaranteed buyback. That's what they do. You could probably do it at any dealership.
Yeah. Okay. Great. There you go, Priscilla. I trust you got that. You purchase the car with a balloon payment arrangement, or you pay it off for, I don't know, 3 years or whatever the case might be. And then obviously you can do the changeover later on with the conditions that apply, obviously, otherwise. Yes. Yeah, what happens, if you don't...
Making sure that the balloon payment is the same amount as what the guaranteed buyback for the car is, obviously.
Yes. Okay, cool. Yes. Sounds like wisdom right there. All righty. You mentioned tire pressure just now. How often should I be checking my tire pressure? Because I've always... Okay, I'll tell you what I do. I just, every time I go fill up, I ask them to thingy the tires one more time. Is that right? Is there a different way to do it? And
That's the best way. I mean, every time or every second time you go to fill up, I mean, they are there. It's not going to take your time. You don't even have to do it yourself.
Yeah.
So that's a good way to do it. If there's one tire, let's say it's the front left, that you see every time they have to kind of refill that, then you know that you've got a slow puncture there.
Yeah.
And you can have that looked at. So it's also an easy early diagnostic. And then, of course, every once in a while, like once a month, once a quarter even, just check that your spare wheel is still inflated as well. Because you don't want to get a flat tire and stand next to the road and then we take the spare out, that's flat as well.
All righty. We've had another question come in here. Oh, sorry, my screen just did a funny thing. Let me go back. How viable are the Chinese-made electronic cars priced at around 40,000?
Sure. Okay. That's a difficult question because I'll need to be able to talk about a specific car. But I can tell you this, that the Chinese cars are catching up to the other cars in quality and build quality at a speed of knots. GWM, for instance, has been in the country for a while. They also bring in a brand called Haval, which is the sort of more upmarket brand, like Lexus would be today. And Haval is selling hundreds of cars per month in South Africa. They've got the right amount of dealerships, the right amount of backup. So the Chinese is very much in the country with quality products. And every time they bring out a new product or a new model, you can see how big the improvement is on the previous one. So in South Africa, years and years back, we only used to have Fords and Chevs and that kind of thing. And then the Japanese came here, and people called it Jap scrap. I mean, Nissan, Toyota, Suzuki, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it took them about 10 years, but they eventually became market leaders.
True.
Then the Koreans came here, and nobody thought anything about a Korean car, and they caught up a lot quicker than the Japs did. And now look at Kia and Hyundai. I mean, these are also top-notch cars. So now the Chinese are here, and it's amazing to see how fast they are catching up to the other brands. A lot of quality Chinese vehicles are on the market at the moment.
Yeah, what a little determination can do, hey? So the moral of the story is just start. Who knows, you might be a market leader soon. Thank you so much, Marian. I trust that you've been answered. Johan, we have another question here from Anonymous. What causes a car to make a funny squeak sound once you step on the clutch? And also, you find that the car shakes and isn't as smooth when changing into the first and the second gear?
Okay, this obviously the manual car, because it wouldn't have a clutch otherwise if it was automatic.
Yeah.
This could be this is obviously a clutch problem. You get a shudder on the clutch, and of course when you pull away, there's more pressure, or you use the clutch slower, and there's more pressure when you pull away in first gear than what you would do a quick shift, for instance, between third and fourth. So the problem would be a lot more pronounced in first when you pull away. But it's definitely a clutch problem that they need to have it looked at, because it's not going to get better, obviously.
Yeah.
It's just going to get worse, yeah. So it's usually better to get ahead of the problem.
Okay. All righty. Did we answer both questions? Yes, we did. Okay. All righty. Thank you so much. I trust that you've been answered. I don't think I'm going to get through all my questions now that I see where we're at. I'm trying to see difference. Another good question. What's the difference between a turbocharger and a supercharger?
Okay, basically they are the same thing. The difference between a supercharger and a turbocharger is the way that they are powered. A supercharger is powered by a chain or something that's powered by the engine,
mm-hmm.
while a turbocharger is powered by a dynamo in the exhaust. So there's hot exhaust air coming from the engine running through the exhaust, and there's a little propeller in the exhaust that spins because the air is coming through, and the faster that little thing spins, the faster the turbo spools. So the turbo is basically powered by the air in the exhaust, while the supercharger is powered by the car itself.
All righty. When should I change my transmission fluid?
Well, that is done when you change it out totally. That's done with every service interval. So it'll say in your car's manual, it'll say the service interval is 10,000 Ks or 15 or 20 or 30, whatever the case may be. And you put in new oil every time obviously you service the car, and you top up the oil in between when you refuel and I check the oil. You just do top-ups in between the services.
Alrighty. We're in conversation with motor journalists, in case I haven't said this in a while. Johan van Donder, we're talking car questions everyone wants to ask but is afraid to. And yes, you can remain anonymous. Don't be shy. 082-657-2729 to Telegram or WhatsApp us. 37871 is our text line, the cost of 1.50 per SMS. And of course, if you want to call us, you can even leave us a voice note. 012-334-1322. We'll get to your voice note as quickly as possible. Where am I? Yes. Can I switch to synthetic oil or a different grade? Is that allowed?
You can switch to synthetic oil, but you need to do some research first, especially if it's an older car. Because a mineral oil, which is a natural oil, cars used to use mineral oils, and the older cars, the seals that was used in that system don't hold the synthetic oil. So if you put synthetic into an old car that used mineral oil, sometimes the seals and stuff wouldn't be able to cope with that. If it's a newer car, it wouldn't be a problem. But then also I need to ask, why would someone want to change the oil? I mean, if you've got a newer car, just basically stick to what the manufacturer has said, I would say.
Makes sense. Did we talk about replacing the timing belt?
The timing belt is an interesting one because that is usually a very expensive exercise.
Mm-hmm.
It's luckily something that doesn't happen often. Usually the timing belt needs to be replaced or set around 100 to 120,000 kilometers or every 100 to 120,000 kilometers. But that's also in the older cars. Some of the newer engines don't even have a timing belt, luckily. So it's only applicable if it's an older car.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to do it yourself. The mechanics will tell you when it's necessary.
Okay.
It does need to be done before it goes wrong, because then you'll need a new engine. It's not something you need to be concerned about. Unless you're buying a car, a second-hand car, and let's say that car's got 110 or 210,000 Ks on the clock, you need to know whether the next service is a timing belt service, because a service that's going to cost you 6,000 or a service that's going to cost you 30,000 is a big difference.
I hear you. Absolutely. Last question before we get to your contact details. What's the difference between over and understeer?
It's the difference between laughing and screaming, I guess. Well, if you're in a car and you go around the corner and you are very, very fast, you're basically overcooking it, and you are turning and the nose pushes, the car doesn't want to turn, and the nose pushes out.
Yeah.
That is understeer, because the car's not steering to where you want to go, so it's called understeer.
Okay.
Or when you go into a corner and you turn into it and it's a little slippery and the rear of the car comes out. In other words, your nose over-rotates from where you want to go. That's called oversteer. And if you know how to handle these things, oversteer is very much fun because it's called drifting. And understeer means you're heading towards the sidewalk and you're going to need a new wheel.
Ah, interesting. All righty. Thank you. This has been very helpful and very informative. I've certainly enjoyed every moment of it. If people want to get in touch with you, Johan, where can they find you?
I think Facebook is the easiest. Trail Rider Media. We've got a Facebook page called Trail Rider Media, and they can check us out there.
Excellent. Thank you so much. This was very, very helpful. And I'm sure even those who remained anonymous were happy to get their questions answered. Much appreciated. Until we chat again real soon.
Yeah, thanks and a lot. Goodbye, listeners.
Cheers. That was motor journalist Johan van Donder there of Trail Rider Media chatting to us about all those questions that everybody wants to ask, but they're just too afraid to. And listen, if there's anything that you want us to chat about regarding related to cars, please don't be shy. I'm intending to make this more of a regular feature so that, and based on your participation, looks like there are lots of things that people want to know. Feel free to make your suggestions, and yeah, we'll schedule them in once a month accordingly. But yeah, thank you so much for your participation. Really appreciate it. We continue with the joyous celebration song. Kariba, kariba, kariba.
Reach your customers in the car, at the office, at home, or wherever they are, night or day. Through advertising with Radio Pulpit, you can reach a large, unique and loyal audience in a most affordable way. With over 500,000 people on our various platforms, from Gauteng to the Cape, you simply cannot go wrong. So advertise today. Contact us on 012-334-1339. Or for advertising packages that we offer, go to www.radiopulpit.co.za. Terms and conditions apply.
It's here. Radio Pulpit's new website is live. You can tune in at radiopulpit.co.za and enjoy crystal clear sound with just a click of a button, or listen to our podcasts. Discover biblical truths in our daily devotionals and let our stories of hope inspire you. You can download our app on this new look, easy to use platform. Find your favorite program, get to know our presenters and so much more at radiopulpit.co.za. Radio Pulpit, your daily companion.
You and 657 AM and Life, a winning team on the road to eternity.